Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, and welcome to the fourth annual Sarah Takeover of the Only Podcast. I'm Sarah G. You can find me on the hellscape dregs of Twitter, at sgender, and I'm joined today by your co-host, Sarah Norris. You cannot find her still, and please do not try.
Sarah, the only people who don't get time off this time of year are pro athletes and the folks at BetOnline. With NFL, bowl season, and the NBA in full swing over the holidays, BetOnline isn't taking a second off to make sure you have all the up-to-the-second odds, news, and info. BetOnline has all the sports wagering knowledge you need, where you need it, with both desktop and mobile access. Head there today to get into the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Sarah, Happy New Year. Welcome to 2024.
You know what? Happy New Year to you. Nothing terrible has happened to me yet thus far. So I'm feeling pretty good about the year. How about you?
Yeah, great. You know, we're like, 15 hours in. So far, so good. Could be worse,
Do you know what else today is, though, on like a happier note? Today is the 10-year anniversary of Michigan State's Rose Bowl win. Do you remember joy?
I do remember joy. What a great time to be alive. I think that I want to say we didn't appreciate that when it was happening, but that's not true. We like absolutely did. Everybody was like, this is great.
I think that's one time that we could look at and say, you know what? We did appreciate that. We weren't fat and sassy about football success. No. I think we were truly savoring every moment. And honestly, one of my regrets is not going to that game. Yeah. But you know my superstition about me being at big games. And I cannot
You're
be
actually
there.
Not allowed to go to any more big games. You're banned. They have a picture of you.
Do not let this woman in. Although it wasn't in Indy, so I feel like maybe that's it would have been okay. Anyway, I'm glad I didn't chance it. And I'm glad we can remember the good times. Speaking of good times, though, how about them Michigan State Spartan men's basketball team?
Yeah, they're back.
They're back. Oh, the tales of our demise were incorrect. We will not scrap the program. I say this hesitantly because you never know, and with Big Ten season right around the corner. But Michigan State is in the middle of a 4-game win streak, and not all cupcakes. We're looking pretty good. And even though it was a while ago, I really want to touch on the Baylor game real quick before we move to the more recent games. And let me just say, I was absolutely shocked to see that team show up, especially after losing to Nebraska and really looking lackluster, right? I think after they got murdered by Wisconsin, we all thought, okay, maybe, you know, they'll turn around at Nebraska. It's Nebraska after all. And then no, they looked terrible still. And then I was like, oh, cool. We only have Baylor coming up next. But they came out hot and didn't quit. And it was one of the best games I've seen Michigan State play over the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely the best game so far this year, you know, and I think that the early season was so rocky and like in typical Tom Izzo fashion, right? You expect to lose those games to like Arizona and Duke, and they actually didn't play terribly in either of those games. They gave both those teams a pretty good game, but you know, that losing to James Madison right off the bat really kind of threw the whole thing for a loop, right? And like you said, the Wisconsin and Nebraska losses also not great. So that Baylor game was really like a must-win game, and it's good to see that they didn't let that pressure kind of like get to them. They came out, they played really well, and they're using that momentum to carry them into the new year.
Yeah, and
Doak were saying they were going to make the tournament in December. Yes. And like to me, that's like, I understand that things were bad. I understand that they had lost 5 games, but like, saying a Tom Izzo coached Michigan State team is not going to make the tournament after they've played fewer than like 10 games is totally crazy to me.
I am firmly on the record as an anti-highly ranked Michigan State basketball team fan. Yeah. I prefer to hide in the shadows and then strike when they least expect it. So the fact that we came in so highly ranked and then just kind of forgive me, but shit the bed didn't shock me entirely. It felt to me like they were really online reading the things that people were saying about them. And, you know, and unfortunately for them, it didn't translate into any positive play. But when they came out versus Baylor, I finally felt like, oh my gosh, this is the team that we've been waiting for. We knew that Tyson is going to be the center of the offense. He has to be, because that little tiny man is going to get to the basket regardless of who they're playing. And in the Baylor game, you know, he had 25 points, which I'll take that. I'll take that every day. I don't want to have to rely on just him, but really good there. AJ waking up, because as much as we want Tyson to be the scorer, the team runs through AJ and his chaos, and he was incredibly disinterested, it seemed. Or maybe that's just his reaction to pressure, which is kind of terrifying, but I couldn't really figure out what was going on with him other than he just did not look like he wanted to be the leader of that team. And unfortunately for him, he is, and he has to figure it out, but he's been playing great as of late, especially after Baylor. So whatever they did to wake him up for that game, I will take and hope that can continue on throughout the year.
And I think one good thing, just one more thing about the Baylor game, and then we can go on. I think the other great thing about the Baylor game is, you know, through those first like 10 or whatever games, they were shooting so poorly, right? The shooting was abysmal. And it seemed like in the Baylor game, Tom really got everybody together and was like, look, here's what you can do if the shooting's not working. You can play defense and you can rebound. And those are the two things that they did incredibly well in that Baylor game and, you know, should be able to continue to do well. They really did not give up on defense. They really rebounded well. And so, like, if the shots aren't falling, they can't, like, to your point, AJ can't sort of, like, lose interest in playing defense. He can't lose interest in rebounding. They have to keep after those things. And I think that that was a real bright spot in the Baylor game, is the defense was really great and really consistent effort through, I almost said all four quarters, but both halves of the game.
And I do think, not in men's anyway. And I do think, like, turning it around defensively is ultimately what the spark was, right? Because they punched Baylor in the mouth. Like, there is no other way to describe it. They punched Baylor in the mouth and they said, we're going to set the tone here. I was worried at the end of the game that the Pistons were going to try and do a deal where Michigan State had to play all their home games at Little Caesars.
In Detroit, yeah.
Which I would not blame them for trying to do that, though they did break that losing streak. So shout out to the Pistons. Nobody beats them 28 times in a row, hang the banner, whatever it was. So after the Baylor game, Michigan State went on to play Oakland, which is always a little bit scary for me because it seems like they always have one or two guys who can hit threes from anywhere. Also, they had Rocket Watts, which I forgot about entirely. I think he's been there 2 years. It's hard to say, you know, with transfer.
Who was it? Now Mississippi State, and then I think he's been in Oakland 2, maybe 3 years.
I also want to say quickly that the tone with Rocket Watts' return to the Breslin Center over Pierre Brooks' return to the Breslin Center was really stark. I do not know. They were trying to fight Pierre Brooks. He and AJ didn't shake hands in the line.
They obviously had beef like that. But yeah, it seemed like everybody was cool with Rocket. And I always liked Rocket, and I thought it was a shame that he couldn't, you know, when he was a freshman, he really gave MSU some great games. And yeah, I just think it was a shame what happened with him in the program. And it's nobody's fault. It just is what, you know, what happened is what happened. But
yeah. Sometimes you can't find your way, you know, that's just it. And you need a fresh start. And I'm glad that players are allowed to get that now. And especially him, like I want him to succeed and it looks like he's doing all right.
Greg Campy definitely always comes into that game trying to get a win. Greg Campy wants to win
sweaters.
That game.
I missed the sweaters though.
Yeah, boring this year.
In his Grinch sweater will always be one of my favorite Michigan State moments.
That was great. I know it was a little bit boring this year. I guess it wasn't the game in Detroit. It was the Baylor game instead. So that game was played at the Brez. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe they decided not to have the holiday spirit.
Yep. And then after that game, they annihilated Stony Brook, which sometimes
that game wasn't even on TV. I didn't. We cared about that game. Yeah.
I hope it went well for everyone. It looks like it went fine for us. And that leads us to the Indiana State game 2 days ago. Was that on the 30th? What day is it?
It was on the 30th. Yeah.
but that marked the first time, which I was kind of shocked about, but it was the first time that Michigan State and Indiana State played each other since the national championship game.
Yeah, I found that really surprising too.
You'd think somebody would figure it out. And also, I have a grievance to air. Why weren't we in our throwbacks? Why were we not in the script jerseys?
Great question.
Who made that call? Because the call was wrong. but Michigan State did end up winning that game 87-75. Indiana State is scrappy, but I did just want to touch quickly on the Jeremy Fears situation. I'm sure everybody has heard about it by now, but just in case you have not, because the way they covered it on the broadcast was really odd to me. But unfortunately, when Jeremy was home over Christmas break, he was had a little house party with some of his high school friends, and he was shot in the leg. It appears, as much as I've seen, I don't think they caught the person who did it, but they just came into the house and started shooting at random. And unfortunately, Jeremy was hit in the leg. He had surgery immediately the next day, and they had him up and walking, and he was able to go home. I'm so glad that he is likely to be fine. What an awful, scary situation. And I do think it was bizarre on the broadcast. They didn't mention what happened. I guess people are afraid of talking about the gun situation, but like, he was shot. It's awful. Something way more serious could have happened. And I'm so glad he was back and able to be on the bench for this game.
And while we're talking about coverage, as a former member of the media myself, I don't like to be the media person, but the ESPN article about this that brought up the shooting at Michigan State last year and Adrian Payne's death by gun violence, out of pocket. I mean, that it doesn't have anything to do, neither of those things have anything to do with the basketball program. They happened in three different states. Adrian Payne was in Florida, the MSU shooting obviously in Michigan, and Jeremy Fears was shot in Illinois. They're completely unrelated. And I think that the attempt to draw some kind of conclusion or make some kind of insinuation about Michigan State is insane. Obviously the problem is much bigger than one particular college basketball program. Yeah. But we are glad that Jeremy is better. He was at the game. I'd like to encourage more sitting.
Honestly, that man was up on his feet the entire time. Like, I just wanted to be like, are we sure he shouldn't be sitting down? But he looked like he was moving much better. The video that I saw when he was in the hospital, I think his dad posted it. He was not moving well, but he was just fresh out of surgery. He's young, he's healthy. I am so hopeful that next year he'll be okay, but I don't think we see him again this year. Do you?
No. My conclusion based on that video that you're talking about, the one where he was obviously like struggling to walk, you know, obviously I don't know the extent of his injury, if it was just, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but based on that video and the amount of time he's probably going to have to take off to recover, I don't think he'll be back this year.
Yeah, but I know that he'll be in good hands with the Michigan State staff, and I am sure it was encouraging for the team to have him there. And honestly, a lot of those things piling up made me a bit nervous about this game. They had a long layoff. You know, they have to rally around their young teammate. But Indiana State was also feisty and annoying. And when I was, you know, sitting down to watch and they were talking about how well they shoot threes, I thought to myself, oh, good. And then they had that giant man in the rec specs, Robbie Avila. I want to say Avila, but it's not pronounced the same as like the Tigers.
Tigers.
I don't think I'm going to say it right, and I hope not to talk about this man for too long. But when I saw him out there in those rec specs and I saw him make a three, I was like, don't you dare, sir. This is not your game. Get out of here. Yes. But we handled him pretty well. Unfortunately, he got into some foul trouble. It was a very physical game, and I was really impressed with how Michigan State responded to that. Indiana State went on a run in the second half, which you kind of saw coming just because they were hitting so well. But we clamped down defensively and didn't let that deter us. And I think that was a game that we would have lost earlier this year.
Yeah. So I was on a plane when this game was being broadcast, but I did watch it later and I'd seen the final score. And basically this game was a lot closer than I thought based on the final score. You know, if I had seen that we won by 12, I would not have anticipated that Indiana State was winning halfway through the second half. You know, I mean, not by a lot, but you know, it was much closer than the final score made it seem. Definitely a good effort by MSU. Very pesky. Also, just one further thing about Indiana State, I love that their team name is the Sycamores. Like, more interesting, non-violent team names. I think Sycamores is just so like cute in their little powder blue jerseys. I love it.
I mean, and they wore their throwbacks, just for the record. Mm-hmm. They wore their throwbacks. So
I also like they talked about on the broadcast that when they built the Indiana State Larry Bird statue, it was after they built the Magic Johnson statue and they made sure to make it like 3 feet taller or something.
Stay petty so you don't have to get petty, you know, like that really resonated with me as well. I was also surprised Magic wasn't there. He usually pops up at things like this, but you know, I'm
he's
sure
a busy man.
He's a busy man counting his billions, so I'm sure he was off doing something else. I think one player we haven't mentioned yet, which I would love to talk about, obviously, as he has been one of my favorite players, but I love the quiet contribution from Malik Hall. I didn't really realize, and actually John said something about like, check out Malik's stat line, you're going to be surprised. And it was a pleasant surprise, which really delighted me, but he scored 18 points. He had 5 assists and 8 rebounds. He does appear still to be terrified to shoot three pointers, but it doesn't bother me if then he's trying to figure out how to get down low, especially where we're still figuring out what big man is actually going to work for us. So looking at those stats, I think he has turned a corner maybe, but that is the thing about Malik, is where he will have a few good games, or like 2 good games, like the Seton Hall game from a couple of years ago, and then he disappears entirely. And I really do think we need him to be physical on defense. He's really annoying when he's locked in, and drive to the basket and get those 2s. I think all of that is super important. And I'm glad he's been playing a lot better over the last couple of games.
Yeah, he's very streaky. You know, we said this about MSU, I feel like, last year. They're just streaky, you know, and a lot of these guys are really streaky. AJ is certainly incredibly streaky. He's on a good streak right now, so, like, we love to see it. Malik also, like, on a good streak. And this is the thing, when some of these guys who are more streaky players are all playing, you know, well at the same time, this is really quite a good basketball team. You know, Tyson is really the only truly consistent player as of right now. Tyson is going to go out there and get you a bucket, get his numbers every single game. You know,
the thing that worried me about Tyson in this game though was he was on the ground a lot.
Yeah,
he had that weird thing where he ran into the scorer's table and messed up his knee. It looked like he hyperextended.
Went between the table and the, that was really strange.
He fell on his hip, and I do think that was bothering him the rest of the game.
Yeah.
After that happened, so if we could, you know, get that bubble wrap going, it's, you know, they're entering Big Ten season. It's nothing but physical from here. But yeah, if we could just keep Tyson off the ground, that would be nice.
I made that big sighing noise because I was thinking, I was like, oh, it'd be great if he didn't have to play so much. And it's like, now, of course, with the loss of Fears, you know, it's not going to do anything to help alleviate his minute count, which is already astronomically high. But somebody who has, I think, did probably, when the news about Jeremy came out, probably got a serious talking to, just in terms of like, hey, dude, you need to, like, this is an opportunity for you, is Trey Holloman, right? Because I think that he did play very well in the Indiana State game. He's good on defense. He's a good passer. He still sometimes, he's only a sophomore, right? Am I right about that?
I think so.
I think so too. He's still young. So sometimes he does make a pass that is a little bit crazy. And sometimes he does take a 3 that is ill-advised. But I definitely think that this year, you've seen a lot of growth from him. So, like, hopefully he can continue to play well and take some of the minute pressure off of Tyson and AJ. Because, without Fears, you know, they're going to lose some of that.
Yeah, and I do think that the difference for Trey, I'm just going to float this out there, is he removed his t-shirt from under his jersey.
Oh, yeah.
So now going full Cassius Winston, you don't mind him playing so far, but him only being a sophomore, I think these minutes are going to be super valuable, especially in the NCAA tournament, that to be able to rely on him, that he's gotten good minutes in good games, and he can continue to build on that throughout the Big Ten season. But I think he has been such a difference maker, especially on defense, in this Indiana State game where they were getting so many threes and making so many threes. He often was on the perimeter with a hand in the face doing his best. It didn't always stop them. They were just that good at three-point shooting, but he was at least active and he's really involved in the game. And I think the guys are really respecting what he's bringing to the court now, especially now that his role will absolutely be elevated without Jeremy able to play. And so I'm less worried about that spot now because it seems that he is relishing the opportunity to get more playing time. And so you love to see that development.
Yeah, he had only 4 points, but I don't necessarily think we need him as a scorer. The rest of his stat line, though, awesome. 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block, 3 steals, and only 1 turnover. Like,
yeah,
that's great. He was 0-for-2 from three, whatever. I don't really care about that. You know, he had 11 points against Baylor. But yeah, I think, you know, like you said, on defense, 3 steals, 1 block, and then 3 assists, and only 1 turnover. Really good stats for him in that game.
Yep. And after the game, on another player note, Izzo compared Jaden Akins to Gary Harris. So that's an exciting comparison that I appreciate.
Tom loves to just be comparing people to Gary Harris. Like,
it's true.
It's just like every time somebody can shoot the ball and play a little defense, Tom's like, oh, Gary Harris. That's what he reminds me of.
But I do think we're getting good Jaden now, though. I think at the beginning of the year, same thing. He was putting a lot of pressure on himself. I was concerned maybe he was going to transfer after last year with, you know, the freshman class that was coming in. I'm so glad he's sticking it out and really starting to come into his own here.
Yeah, I wonder about, because, you know, he and AJ both put in for evaluation for the draft last year.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, nobody really thought AJ was going to go, but Jaden, you could maybe see it. And I just wonder if both of them got their feedback from the draft, whatever that might have been. And so we're like very focused in on improving in whatever areas they were told to improve. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's, you know, just forcing it a lot. We've talked, you know, we've talked about the pressure that this team is under and, you know, the expectations and et cetera. But yeah, I definitely think both of them. The big difference over these last 4 games is the two of them playing like the players they were last year and not, you know, whatever was going on in the first part of the season where they both were just kind of inexplicably bad, and not just at the shooting, just like kind of at all phases of the game. Not great.
Yeah. The one area, and I don't even want to talk about it because I don't know what the answer is still. I think we're getting better play, and that's our bigs situation. I do think the less pressure we put on Mahdi to score, the better it will be. I know that's a tricky thing to say. We're like, you're not going to get those points down low, but maybe you can use somebody like Malik there or something like that, as long as he's afraid to shoot threes. But Mahdi played better, I think. He's just so strong that you want him to be physical defensively, and I think he's doing that better, but I still think there are instances where he gets a quick pass or he gets an opportunity and he fumbles, basically, you know, where he's just not scoring. Better, but not great. And Carson Cooper is fine, but I just don't think we're getting a whole lot there still.
Yeah, I mean, he's also a sophomore, and as a big, you know, it's like he actually, as a sophomore big, for somebody who's not like, you know, Hunter Dickinson or Xavier Booker, like, you know, somebody who came in with a huge pedigree, I think that he's fine, if not slightly ahead. And I think the thing that maybe we have forgotten since he's been out all season is that last year when Tom needed a freshman big, he mostly wasn't playing Cooper, he was playing Kohler.
True.
Kohler got the bulk of those backup minutes last year because Kohler is a much more adept scorer.
Yeah.
Cooper's good on defense. He's a good block, shot blocker. He's a decent rebounder. But Kohler is the one who has that kind of just like nose for the ball around the basket, quick, easy put up, you know, very annoying on defense. If you remember, I think it was the first Michigan game last year, one of the Michigan games last year, he gave Hunter Dickinson work the entire game as a freshman, right? So like, I think that we are all kind of having, maybe not all of us. You know, obviously he's probably going to be on limited minutes having been out since November or whatever. But I do think there's a solution there that involves Kohler. And I think Cooper, like you said, is fine. He's been playing well. I think his length is a good asset. I think that he is a good rebounder and a decent defender. But yeah, I think honestly, we only, our guard play is so good.
Yeah.
That we only need serviceable bigs. We you know, because right now nobody thinks that we're going to score down low. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah,
Mahdi is not really a scoring threat. Cooper is not so much of a scoring threat. So it makes our ability to do things like play inside out reduced, because everybody, and this is another problem at the beginning of the season, is teams just started doubling Tyson.
Yeah.
Like, well, nobody else can score. So we're just going to focus all of our efforts on Walker. And then, you know, AJ and Akins weren't scoring. Which made that bad. So, you know, we only need kind of like C plus B minus level big play. So
I just hope we can get that, but
it's, they all have to play better. And Kohler, when he comes back, hopefully needs to be the player that he was last year with some improvement.
I just hope that his mysterious Michigan State basketball foot injury is healed, because I think what we have seen over the last couple of years, you know, when 2 to 3 players a year go out with those injuries, they end up having to get back in the boot. And he already had that once in his recovery, where he was out of the boot and then he was back in maybe for the Baylor game. But then he warmed up before the Indiana State game, obviously wasn't ready to play yet. So I just hope that he is fully healed and we can start building back up his minutes, especially as we enter the Big Ten, where there's going to be a little bit more pressure in that situation. But I do agree with you. As long as we're getting more balanced scoring, it's not just Tyson. Everybody's active and we're doing what we're doing defensively. The pressure has lessened. And of course, the Xavier Booker conversation, I don't know that there's much more to say other than Izzo doesn't think that he's ready. And Izzo is stubborn and he's not going to play him until he feels like he's ready. And maybe it's only going to be a couple minutes here or there. But I don't think we're going to see him much more. And that's okay. As long as we're getting some production elsewhere, I don't think we can expect him to be ready to play now. And then, you know, maybe we look towards next year for him, but like you said, we just need serviceable. So I'm hoping that we continue to have that and everybody keeps doing their job. So it puts less pressure on that position.
Yeah. And about Xavier Booker, I mean, if there's one thing I've learned as a Michigan State basketball fan, there's nothing more futile than getting yourself rung up about Tom Izzo minutes decisions. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's not, first of all, you have no influence on what that Hall of Fame basketball coach is going to do with his team. And two, he doesn't owe you an explanation, you know?
Yeah. So it's, and like, he's not going to give you one.
And he's not going to give you one. He's very stubborn. He's going to do what he does. And, you know, it's just Tom decides the playing time and that's in his hands, you know?
Yeah. So as we look ahead, Michigan State will get back into Big Ten play. They're currently 0-2. Yikes, hate to see it. But other teams have started that way and figured it out. But we will play Penn State on January 4th. And Penn State is kind of a conundrum. I don't think they're good or very good, at least. They lost to Butler, who Michigan State beat by 20. They lost to Texas A&M and Bucknell. So kind of all over the place there. They beat Ohio State in Big Ten play, but lost to Maryland. So I don't know what to make about them. They do have Puff Johnson, which is a great name. And I love a strong name. But other than that, I'm not that worried. I think that if we continue to play like we have been, we should be okay there.
Yeah, I think that, like, oh God, I just pulled up the Big Ten standings and Michigan State is dead.
I know. Don't look at it.
I was just curious about Penn State. So I think Penn State's got the same Big Ten record as Purdue. So, you know, do it that way you will.
And it's at home. It's at home. Right. So that should be good. Yeah.
I think that about Penn State, and really, honestly, most of the Big Ten, except for like Purdue and Illinois and like maybe Wisconsin, is that like it's all just kind of a muddle. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like nobody's really terrible, I think, but nobody's really great either. So that's the kind of like, you know, it can go, and it's, which is why you're seeing this like such a mixed bag. Like, you know, talking about Penn State, they beat Ohio State, but they lost to Butler and Bucknell. You know, it's, I think there's a lot of that, honestly, in college basketball. I saw Arizona just lost to Stanford.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's one of those years, I think, where there's nobody that's really, you know, heads and shoulders above, which is why Purdue has been number one for like 100 years.
I know.
Despite losing to Northwestern.
Yeah. Speaking of, Michigan State plays them on January 7th. And I just need to say, how is it possible that our greatest enemy, Boo Booey, is still in college? We have had enough. How is this legal? He's basically leading their stats in every category. He's the one who beat Purdue. Like, I just don't understand Northwestern and how Boo Booey is still there.
Get a job.
Boo-booey. Get a 401k, sir.
Yeah, you're old enough. Get the hell out of here. Yeah, look, what more can we say about Boo Booey that hasn't already been said? We've had enough of him. And hopefully he does not once again make Michigan State rue the day that he ever touched a basketball.
Of course, we're playing at Northwestern,
which
we have 10 people in the crowd, and all of them are Boo Booey's relatives out there making the most noise.
Like, Taylor Battle will be there.
Taylor Battle, isn't he his cousin or something?
Yes, they're related somehow. I don't understand. But he will be there, also annoying me because another person that I can't stand. Oh no, he's a coach for Northwestern now. Great.
Yeah, I know. Cool. Which is why.
I thought he would just be there, but no, he's actually a coach.
Yeah, I knew he was on the staff in some form. But anyway, so Penn State and Northwestern are Michigan State's next two Big Ten games. And I'd really like to get in the win column, ideally two wins, and then we'll be ready to go. So hate seeing us in the bottom, but it's super early. And I would venture to say we're a completely different team than the team who played Wisconsin and even to some extent Nebraska. So hoping for two quick victories there. So looking around the Big Ten, obviously there's Purdue. They virtually have the same team as they did last year. Zach Edey is still there. The other lawyer is still there. I will forever and always be dubious about Purdue just because of what happened in the NCAA tournament last year. And honestly, the last couple of years, I just don't think, I'm not in on them, and I will forever be out on them because I'm a hater. And I don't think they'll pull a Virginia and lose to a 16 and then win the national title.
Two things about Purdue. One, yes. I love how we refuse to learn the other lawyer's name. He's just the other lawyer.
The other lawyer.
Whatever your name is, sir, we don't care. And two, I'm with you. If there is one thing about me, I am going to doubt Purdue. If Purdue has any believers, then I am dead I'm right there with you. Even if you go back to those, oh my God, Carson Edwards Purdue yes. teams, you know, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's just, I'm not a believer. I'm not a Matt Painter believer. I'm not a Purdue believer. You know, I don't think they'll lose in the first round again, but like I also don't think that they are. See my earlier comments about like nobody being great, nobody being terrible. You know, this is going to be one of those years where, like last year, right, where there was no one or two seeds in the Final Four. I think that's we're going to have a similar situation again where there's a lot of teams that make it far that are unexpected. Because you know, you look at a team like Arizona, I think just is now at 10, or Duke, who's at 9. You know, that would probably maybe put one of them at a two seed, but the point is, they those teams are just as good as Purdue. Yeah. You know, they're like pretty much on equal footing. So I think that there's definitely a lot that can happen between now and March for sure, especially with Purdue.
Yeah, and elsewhere in the Big Ten, maybe a team that at least I didn't know was going to be very good. They had a lot of turnover. They lost a couple people to the transfer portal. They lost a couple people because they graduated, but that would be Illinois. They've started off the year really strong. However, they just had a situation kind of rock their team where Terrence Shannon Jr. was arrested on charges of rape, and he was having an incredible season. So really trying to fill that void, I think, is going to be obviously a really hard task. But they've played really well. They've had a really tough schedule. They lost to Marquette. They lost to Tennessee, but they've played a lot of those good teams early on. They played Oakland as well. They beat them. So I think they're an interesting team. They look like a much better team this year than they did last year, where to me it looked like they all hated each other. So I think that they're strong, but losing Terrence Shannon Jr. I think is really going to change things for them throughout this year. Okay. Elsewhere,
yeah, we thought she's their leading scorer. They play. Yeah. Well, they played Purdue on the 5th, which should be an interesting game.
Yeah, and then we play Illinois on the 11th. So yeah, so we'll see them soon and see what they got for us. Wisconsin. I remain angry that they annihilated us like they did. I think we play them again. I imagine we do. So hopefully we do better then. Chucky Hepburn has been there 52 years. AJ Storr is playing well. I don't have much else to offer on the Wisconsin front.
We do play Wisconsin at the end of this month. Yeah, they beat Marquette. So like, I don't know, maybe they're okay, but who can really say?
Yeah. And then of course, Michigan. I cannot imagine people are very happy with what's going on in Ann Arbor right now. Juwan had another incident where he was trying to fight the strength coach, allegedly, because of something that happened with his kid. He hasn't been able to coach very much because of some health issues. And they just lost to McNeese State. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be very good. And quite frankly, you love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, what is there to say about Michigan? I think that, you know, part of the problem over there, obviously, is that Juwan's kids are on that team. And that's sort of his primary concern, it seems like. You know, that's what the fight allegedly with the strength coach was about.
Yeah.
You know, Hunter Dickinson has said, you know, the things that he's said about that, the team and whatever. So, you know, that's their business. I do think that my question is just that, like, the Juwan Howard experiment, I have always been a person who was like, what is the point of hiring someone who has no head coaching experience at any level, I mean, college or professional, to be the head coach of a basketball team? And I feel like that's kind of borne itself out. Like, he's a person who doesn't seem to know how to conduct himself. He's a person who doesn't seem to know how to, like, you know, handle the myriad ins and outs of college basketball. So, you know, whatever goes on over there, good luck. Or not, whatever.
I don't care. I just know I've had enough of them. See you later. Yeah. I do wish, like, Hunter Dickinson wasn't in the NCAA still, because I hate hearing about him, but at least we don't have to.
And you know, disgustingly on a good team. Like,
yeah.
Couldn't you at least have the decency to go somewhere and suck?
It's really rude. So yeah, the Big Ten, I think, will be interesting. Maybe it ends where, you know, Purdue wins again, but I don't think it's going to be easy. I think everybody's pretty scrappy. Like, Indiana is leading the Big Ten right now, and I don't even have anything to say about them. Again, everybody's only played 2 games, so there's so much more to come. We'll see what happens. I do hope Michigan State gets it together. And is able to get back to the top. I think we could contend for the title as long as we continue to play like we are now. So we'll see. Lots more games to play, thankfully. So the program is unscrapped, and I am happy to see it.
I, for one, never scrapped it. The scrapping was premature.
All right. Well, we have tried as long as we could to avoid Michigan State football, but here we are. And I don't really want to retread this season. I think it sucked. It sucked to have the school be involved in another scandal. CML, we don't thank you for what you did.
No, thank you, in fact.
Like, just go. And I hope they erase all of what he left on the program, all of the sayings. I don't want to be in the woodshed. I don't want to be in the deep water.
I don't want to chop. I don't want chopping.
I don't want any of it. I just want to sit plainly and win some football games. And Michigan State hired the former Oregon State football coach, Jonathan Smith. And he's done a couple of good things so far. I think number one for me was he hired Courtney Hawkins as our wide receiver coach. Clearly, he knows what he's doing. And you can see that with Jaden Reed, who, by the way, set the Packers record for most receptions by a rookie in franchise history yesterday. We miss you. We love you. He also
you did not need to victimize the Lions the way you did on Thanksgiving Day, but
we do love you in spite of it all. He moved up the recruiting class from the 90s to the 30s. He kept Nick Marsh. He got Aiden Childs, who is a great quarterback prospect from Oregon State. Really excited about that, especially because I don't think there are any quarterbacks left at Michigan State at this time, which is fine. He talked Ethan Boyd, Darius Snow, Derek Harmon, Geno Vandermark, and Jerron Glover into staying. Chuck Brantley took his name out of the portal. And then, of course, he added long snapper Caden Schickle from James Madison. We love a good long snapper. But he's been doing a lot of
As stupid as it seems, the long snapper position for the past 2 years at Michigan State has been atrocious. So we love to see it.
We do love to see it. So it will be nice to just get some consistency. He seemed genuinely thrilled to take over the program. You don't get much better facilities. You don't get much better support. Michigan State wants to be good at football again. And so I think that everybody is cautiously optimistic. Living in Oregon, I saw the work that he did at Oregon State. Of course, that's his alma mater, so I imagine it was challenging for him to leave, but he's willing to put in the work, and he builds those teams that we like, right, where they're going to be scrappy. He's not going to get all the five stars, but he's going to get the guys that work in his system and want to do the work, and I think that that's what's important here. Instead of chasing stars and trying to be Alabama, we should get back to being Michigan State, and we really got away from that. I think everybody got blinded by the flashiness of Mel for a little while because Kenneth Walker was so good, but then we saw what happens when he doesn't have somebody like that. So I'm cautiously optimistic, and I look forward to seeing what we can do. I just want to win again. I just want to win football games.
Miss you winning. Yeah, I think that when you look at those teams that Mel had that were successful, and you look at the position, like the skill position players, we mentioned Jaden Reed, Kenneth Walker, obviously Keon Coleman was an incredible standout at Florida State this year, Jeremy Bernard playing for the Huskies, even Peyton Thorne at Auburn, right? You see that there was a lot of talent. You know, it wasn't necessarily just because Mel was, you know, kind of a genius. There was like a ton of talent there, and obviously, you know, some of that talent he got, like Walker, out of the transfer portal. But, you know, it's not to say that can't be duplicated by somebody else.
Yeah.
Two notes on Jonathan Smith, both relating to his name. One, I can never remember it because it is the most nothing name of all time.
Yes.
But also, I personally am traumatized because it's the same as John L. Smith. And every time I remember what his name is, I'm like, oh, God. Not this.
Truly, that has been one of my biggest struggles is what do you call him, right? Because with John L. Smith, he was, you know, John L. Smith. I don't think I ever called him Coach Jonathan. Smith. I think he was always John L. Smith. And Coach Smith feels weird to me for whatever reason, but I don't want to say Jonathan. Like, I'm not his mom, so I don't know. I don't know what to call him. I'm hopeful I'll find my way. So please, prayers up for me.
You can tell how disinterested I am in the football team because this is the only thing I have to say. Oh, and I'm glad that they kept Courtney Hawkins. When the news broke that they were firing all the assistants. I did say to Sarah, I'm like, I hope they keep Hawkins because I think he's good for the program. I think he knows what he's doing. So
yeah, I will say quickly, I do feel badly for Harlan Barnett. I think like he was given a shit sandwich, right? Like he could not have walked into a worse situation. Everybody was leaving. The program was embarrassed. And you know, he loves Michigan State, right? He played there. He gave so many years of his life there. And I don't even really think they interviewed him, like at least not seriously.
They didn't seriously consider it. Yeah,
which feels shitty to me, but I get it. I understand. And so I do feel badly for him. I don't think he was ready to be a head coach, or at least our head coach. So maybe there will be a smaller program that lets him have an opportunity. I hope that they don't judge too harshly what his head coaching, I'm making air quotes, record looked like. I hope he gets an opportunity to go elsewhere. From what I could see, the guys who stayed loved him, and he loved the team. He loves Michigan State. So I hope he gets an opportunity. I do feel badly for him.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's look around the country and talk about some of the bowl games, or rather one bowl game in particular that was the best spectacle I've ever seen in my life.
The only bowl game that matters. The Pop-Tart
Bowl. You know it.
Bowl.
You love it. The Pop-Tart Bowl. Incredible. And first of all, an incredible lesson in marketing. Leaning into the goofy was the only way to do this. It is all anybody is talking about. I have not stopped sending Pop-Tart Bowl memes since the game is over. It is bringing me such a deep joy.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, brands have looked around, you know, talk about the marketing aspect of the college football bowl system. And they've seen the success of the Duke Mayo Bowl, literally tuned into the Duke Mayo Bowl only to see the coach get mayonnaise dunked on him.
And wait,
eggnog holiday bowl, I saw.
Wait, the Maryland coach, after they won their bowl game, said that he was so glad he wasn't getting mayo dumped on him again. So that has resonated with him.
He was a real spoil sport about the mayo, but the guy who got it this year was a real trooper. And they did dump a water cooler of those like mini Pop-Tarts on the coach. So we love that. So, you know, this is the thing. People in these games where you're like, this game was what, K-State and who? NC State?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So, like, I don't care about this game. Not in my wildest dreams do I care about this game. No. But what I do care about is a giant edible Pop-Tart mascot and a team tearing it apart with their bare hands. Like a bunch of bears in a feeding frenzy. That is what I care about. I care about the Pop-Tart popping up out of a toaster.
Just like bursting from the floor with like pyrotechnics and smoke and everything. It was so funny. I think it was a bonus that the game actually turned out to be
decent,
good, but like kudos. And I can't wait to watch the Pop-Tart Bowl next year. It was amazing. Or in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, which is a weird name. They had a giant Cheez-It, but he came out holding a sign that said he was not edible. He was making it clear from the beginning that his life goal was to be consumed
and devoured.
Game, which also is weird, but it is what it is. So they had the giant Cheez-It. They had like concessions, weird things of cheese. I think I saw like a chili dog that instead of cheese on top had Cheez-Its on top.
I saw a couple of the Tennessee players had like Cheez-Its shaved and dyed into their like hairstyles.
Yeah.
I mean, this is fun. This is good. Bowl games are goofy. Like if you're not in the college football playoff, like you've got to be offering me something else, because the vast majority of these games this year, I'm just going to say it, have been trash.
Yeah.
RIP Florida State, RIP Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State put up a dismal showing in their bowl. You know, they just haven't been good. And so if you're offering me a Pop-Tart, if you're offering me a giant Cheez-It, if you're offering me a mayo bath, like I'm there for that. That is great, because
not product, you personally, though, to be clear, you do not want to be bathed in mayo.
No. I mean, I was coaching a team that won the Mayo Bowl. Yeah. I would accept it. That's what you get.
Yeah.
You know, not recreationally. No, I don't wish to be bathed in mayo, but I will watch it every day.
Yeah.
I think the mayo bath is gross, but I also kind of think that the eggnog bath that they did at the Holiday Bowl was disgusting.
Yeah. No, thank you. But
Yes, I love to see it. Also, I did like that they dumped a big container of Pop-Tarts. I think the Cheez-It Bowl has wrapped up since we've been recording. Yes. But I do hope that somebody got a big bucket of Cheez-Its dumped on them as well.
I don't know, but I do know that Iowa got annihilated by Tennessee 35-0, which does lead me to a stat that I learned on Twitter, which is why I'm still there, because every once in a while you get a real nice nugget of information plus all of the Pop-Tart content. But what I learned was, the Iowa punter, Tory Taylor, broke the record for the most punting yards in a season that was previously held by Johnny Pingle, forgive me if I don't pronounce that right, from Michigan State. And he had held that record since 1938. I also appreciate in the statement that they gave to, I think it was to M Live, that they pointed out that he did it in only 9 games. So we love a petty family. Shout out to their Michigan State roots there. He was also a quarterback punter combo. So when he went out there, he didn't know what he was going to do. But he held that record for, you know, over 80 years. And so we're sad to see that one fall, but I did find that super interesting, that he held it for so long and nobody knew basically. So, shout out to him. Great efforts on punting.
Yeah. It kind of a mixed bag for the Big Ten in the bowl games this year. I think it's really interesting. So the Big Ten is, as of right now, 4-4, with Michigan playing in the college football playoff tonight with wins for Rutgers, Maryland, Minnesota, and Northwestern, and losses for Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, and Iowa. So all of the teams that won were unranked. And I think that's interesting because, you know, obviously some of the ranked matchups, I'm specifically talking about the Wisconsin one, which was actually one of the better games.
Yeah.
That Wisconsin matchup was a stretch, right? Wisconsin was unranked and LSU was number 13. If Wisconsin had managed to win that game, it would have been really impressive. But, you know, Ohio State and Penn State both ranked slightly higher than their opponents. And as I mentioned before, Ohio State really...
Ohio State wasn't there. Like, that was really bizarre. They scored 3 points?
3. And I think that, you know... my family and stuff, we're talking about the backup quarterback, you know, and it's whatever. The backup quarterback is whatever, you know. Obviously a lot of backup quarterbacks are great. Look at the USC quarterback who went through like 6, what's his name, Miller Mason, through like 6 touchdown passes. I think that the real takeaway from that game is that Marvin Harrison Jr. is good.
Yes.
And he didn't play. Shocker. Yes. Right. He didn't play in that game. And I think that, you know, the Ohio State offense has been really riding the Marvin Harrison Jr. train, you know, for the past couple of seasons. And I think without him, and also, you know, they let Missouri come down the field and score twice at the end of that game. You know, that doesn't have anything to do with their backup quarterback or Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, it was just terrible. I didn't get to watch the Penn State game because I was on a plane, but you know, it also
they were Penn State, right? Where we kind of talked about this before we started recording, where it's like, they had a pretty good year, but then they lose when it counts, basically, right? That's all the big games, they lose. And that kind of has been the Penn State MO the last couple of seasons. So theirs wasn't a bad game. It was high scoring, pretty interesting, not really interested in playing defense. So it was one of the better ones as well. But overall, you know, the bowls weren't spectacular. And of course, next year it changes to a 12-team playoff. So it will be interesting to see how that all shakes out, where more teams are involved, more teams have the option to win the national title. And I was reading an article on The Athletic where basically all of the bowl games mean nothing now unless you're playing for a national championship, which, you know, it is what it is. So I don't know what the solve is there, but I'll be curious to see if people get more excited about this 12-team playoff. It's something people have been asking for a long time. and will finally come to fruition. So I think it's cool that they get to host some games on campus. That'll be fun for fans, and cold in some areas. I hope we get some snow games. Those are always more interesting to me, but let's see what happens. But the college football playoffs are getting underway right now as we speak. Michigan is taking on Alabama in the Rose Bowl. And I think I speak for us all when I say, I hope they lose big time. I'm not going to cheer for Bama, but I want Michigan to get annihilated, because the number one rule in college football is you don't want Bama. You've never wanted Bama. You do not want Bama. No.
Yeah, no. Obviously, they would have much rather had Florida State. I saw a lot of Huskies fans in the airport on the 30th, and I was just talking, I was like, imagine how fun that would be, right? You fly down to New Orleans on the 30th, you have New Year's Eve in New Orleans, and then you wake up January 1st to see your team play in the college football playoff. What a delight.
And they're fun to watch. I mean,
yeah, like, just what a good time that would be.
Thankfully, I don't think he can haunt us any longer, so he'll be off, but like, I hope
they're gonna try to get him on that boo booey plan, the Perry Ellis scholarship.
No,
plan for 100 years. I do think another thing about the playoff next year that's interesting, if I'm not mistaken, the way it's gonna work is it's gonna be the 6 highest ranked conference champions, with the demise of the Pac-12 means you're probably gonna have the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, probably whatever the Big East is calling themselves now, and then the top ranked champ from like another conference. So I think this year that might have been like Memphis or Liberty or SMU. So like, I just think that that's going to be interesting, because you're going to have a conference champion in there from couple of these smaller conferences probably. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, because you're probably going to have a situation where somebody like, I don't know, let's say Iowa or Ole Miss gets left out in favor of like a Memphis or an SMU. You know, I'm very intrigued on how the whole thing's going to work with the selection. But I do think it should eliminate some of these arguments where it's like, when we start talking about the teams that are getting left out, it's not going to be undefeated Florida State.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a team that has a couple of losses or plays in it. You know, it's not going to be undefeated UCF. You know, it's going to be teams that have some losses or, you know, have some bad losses, you know, that don't end up getting picked. So yeah, I think it's a good improvement. I still feel like 12 teams is too many, but you know, we'll see how it goes.
But maybe it'll, you know, give more opportunity for like better scheduling too, because there's a lot of ways that college basketball I think is better. But part of that is like, you do get all of these early season exciting matchups because you're allowed to lose and it doesn't destroy your season. In college football, you have one loss and it's over. Most of the time, you know, Alabama
also
has a loss, but it allows for more exciting regular season games.
I also think it can help contribute to parity, right? So again, like you draw a parallel to college basketball. If you play for a school like James Madison or, you know, Kansas State last year, combined with the transfer portal, right? There are going to be guys who are playing for these smaller schools because they know they have an opportunity to get into the playoff, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right now, if you don't play for about 10 schools, you really don't have a shot at getting into the playoff. Your chances are zero. Yep. So, you know, I think that it can, you know, we'll see what actually happens. But I think that this combined with the new transfer portal rules does have the ability to, like, increase parity. You know, think about Jackson State last year. You know, I don't remember what their eventual, you know, record ended up being. But, like, a team like that, that's, like, a very exciting small conference team, or, you know, the UCF teams of the past or the Boise State teams of the past, wouldn't it have been nice to be able to see them, you know, try to put their money where their mouth is? And the same thing for the big schools, right? You know, this is the Virginia Purdue problem, where it's like, if you're a number one seed, if you're that good, why should you be afraid of playing, you know, a smaller school? So yeah, I definitely think that there's some ability I think it will help things overall. I do think it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be such a different schedule. Like you said, some snow games, some really interesting stuff. And, you know, hopefully hopefully people don't get injured. You know, I think that would be the worst thing, is if there were like really about injuries. I think that's the thing everybody's worried about. So
But more importantly, hang on, one big thing that just happened is in the first pass of the game, J.J. McCarthy threw an interception. So they're reviewing it, but it looks good to me. I have it on my little iPad here. Anyway, so yeah, so I think we're all curious to see what happens next year. And, you know, let's try something different. I think this year was kind of a flop for Bulls, and we'll see what happens. Anything else you want to say about college football?
No.
Well, since we have started a new year, Sarah, I want to know, what is your wish for Michigan State athletics in 2024?
That everything is normal and that there's nothing exciting that happens unless we win a national championship in something.
Correct.
Nothing exciting unless it's good.
I would like peace on earth and goodwill for Michigan State. That's what I would like. Nothing exciting unless it's a championship. I would like calm. I would like to sleep in heavenly peace knowing my school isn't doing something ridiculous. Yes. And I hope that's what we have in 2024 and beyond.
Agreed.
Perfect. Well, it was lovely doing this with you. Thanks, John and Austin, for giving us the opportunity to do it again. And I look forward to talking to the three of you left on Twitter. Have a great year, everybody. And we'll talk soon.
See ya.
Bye.
You know, when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks, that's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.